a seismic Supreme Court ruling on presidential immunity that could shape America for years to come.
There is a principle that nobody is above the law, and it has always been understood that the president himself has to abide by the law. This opinion, not only does it grant this immunity, but it grants the immunity in some really sweeping ways, I think go far beyond anything anybody could have assumed.
Plus, thousands of Palestinians displaced multiple times already are ordered to relocate once again.
The latest order is a sign that Hamas has managed to regroup, and we could soon see Israeli forces moving back into Khan Yunis and a resumption of heavy fighting.
And the European leader with the closest ties to Russia meets with Ukraine's president in a rare visit to Kyiv. Today is July 2nd, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Israeli forces bombarded several areas of southern Gaza Tuesday, and thousands of Palestinians fled their homes in what could be part of a final push of Israel's intensive military operations in 9 months of war. Associated Press correspondent Yosef Fetterman reports.
The Israeli military has ordered a mass evacuation from a large part of the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. This isn't the first time we've seen an evacuation order like this. Israel spent several months inside Khan Yunis battling Hamas before withdrawing earlier this year. The latest order is a sign that Hamas has managed to regroup, and we could soon see Israeli forces moving back into Khan Yunis and a resumption of heavy fighting.
AP correspondent Yosef Fetterman. Gaza's European hospital in Khan Yunis is virtually empty, with staff and patients fleeing after the Israeli army's orders for residents in the surrounding areas to evacuate. UNRWA spokesperson Louise Waterridge.
UNRWA estimates that around 250,000 people have been impacted by these orders. Of course, as usual, we expect these numbers to grow. But, you know, for us, this is it's another devastating blow to the humanitarian response here. It's another devastating blow for the people and the families on the ground. It seems that they are forcibly being displaced again and again. You know, making these decisions is now impossible.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken affirmed Monday that President Joe Biden's proposal to end the Israel-Hamas conflict is achievable and urged Hamas to accept it. Blinken also underlined the importance of post-war plans to rebuild Gaza and prevent a security vacuum in the territory. VOA's Veronica Balteras Iglesias reports.
As Israeli troops continue deepening their incursions in Gaza in search of militants, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced Monday that Hamas's military capabilities have almost been eliminated.
We are advancing to the end of the phase of eliminating the terrorist army of Hamas, and there will be a continuation to strike its remnants.
The announcement was made as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, in an interview at the Brookings Institution in Washington, called on Hamas's leadership to accept a phased peace proposal currently on the table.
I think the proposal that President Biden put forward is achievable. And it would be the best way forward, the quickest way to end the conflict in Gaza, to stop the violence, to massively surge assistance, to get everyone home, including American hostages.
As the secretary spoke, the voices of protesters gathered outside the Brookings Institution could also be heard. Blinken, who didn't acknowledge them, stressed that the Israel-Hamas conflict cannot end with a vacuum in Gaza.
It has to end in a way that makes sure that there are clear, coherent, achievable plans for Gaza's governance, for its security, and of course, to start to help people to rebuild their lives that have been so decimated and destroyed.
One of the Palestinians whose life has radically changed and wants accountability is Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmeya. The director of Al-Shifa Hospital was released early Monday after being in Israeli custody since November. He says prisoners were subjected to severe torture and his little finger was broken. He was repeatedly hit on the head until he bled. He says there was almost daily torture in Israeli prisons.
We were subjected to severe torture.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We need instant solution to address the energy security. As you know, that energy is the center of the economy. So this energy scarcity or the energy challenges that are faced in Africa, it kills our economy.
That's African nuclear physicist Senamile Masango, who says the continent, where power outages are common, is crying out for energy solutions. Details coming up also. Several hundred Boko Haram fighters killed more than 40 Chad government troops in the Lake Chad Basin. And there's just a week to go to the U.S. presidential election. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The two major U.S. presidential candidates, former President Donald Trump and current Vice President Kamala Harris, are in the last week of their tight race. Their campaigns have been working hard to lock in voters with major rallies. We have my colleague, Philip Alexio, on the line now. He's on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., as preparations are underway for an event by Harris, the Democratic Party's candidate. Thanks for joining us, Phil.
Nice to be with you, Yehias. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So what will be happening later today on the Mall?
Well, the Vice President is going to be speaking sometime this evening. But what's happening really right now are all the preparations underway. The stage is being set on the ellipse. They call it the ellipse because it's the park area that's sort of a circular area. And that's in front of the White House. So she's between the White House and the monument. And the signs that they're putting up on the stage that we can see from where we are standing are freedom. And also, there's barricades being placed up. You've got dump trucks everywhere. You've got these 8-foot steel barricades up, fence barricades. And then inside the area where about, they're expecting some 20,000 people to show up, but it's kind of hard to tell because you're getting some estimates, perhaps as many as 50,000, but they're really a sort of a wait and see. But all the roads nearby are being closed off, as many as 4 blocks. We're on Constitution Avenue right now, which runs east to west or west to east. And the trucks are out here acting as barricades so no one can get through. So there's plenty of security, plenty of police, and they're still getting things ready up and running. So there's a lot of activity going on now, but it's actually kind of quiet because there's nobody here yet.
Oh, nobody here yet. When does the actual event start?
The event is scheduled to start really this afternoon around 3, 4, 5. They've got Kamala Harris speaking at 7:15 p.m. But that, of course, is if they stick to the schedule. So the events are really starting in the late afternoon, so a couple of hours from now. And so they're just getting things prepared, but it's a beautiful day here. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful fall day here in Washington, D.C., and it's a perfect day for a rally.
And the number of people, did you say 20,000 or how much estimated?
Yeah, so the National Park Service has it pegged at 20,000 because of the permits that the event was requesting. But also the Metropolitan Police Chief here in Washington had thought that perhaps there might be as many as 50,000, but that was a few days ago. So really don't know. They expect at least 20,000. We'll find out once the rally begins.
So people are congregating now, or it's they're trickling in slowly? That's the whole idea there, like just build up until the main event?
Yeah, people are kind of trickling in, but where we are standing, you don't see a whole lot of people because they have so much closed off. And I think that the question now is how many people will they end up having? They have you got a lot of the media across the street with their lights and their umbrellas up, ready to go. The space here is used primarily because of the space in front of the Washington Monument is a big open space for so many people to gather. They'll only be able to have a certain number of people inside the ellipse, and how many that can handle, well, they're prepared to handle at least 20,000. So people are here. I wouldn't say it's very busy right here just yet, but it's starting to warm up.
VOA's Philip Alexiou on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., as preparations are underway for an event by Harris, the Democratic Party's candidate. Thank you for joining us, Phil.
Thank you.
So the Harris speech in Washington today follows Republican Donald Trump's major event at New York's Madison Square Garden on Sunday. Trump, a New York-born businessman and celebrity, hoped to use the event, the iconic venue, to deliver his closing argument against Harris. Polls show Trump and Harris are neck and neck in the battleground states that will decide the next president with just over a week until Election Day. More than 38 million votes have already been cast in early and mail-in voting.
Americans and people around the world are watching closely as the race for the 47th president of the United States unfolds. Voice of America is your trusted source for comprehensive coverage. From daily updates to in-depth analysis, our correspondents will keep you informed every step of the way. Tune in on radio, TV, or online as we count down to November 5th when the results are announced. Stay informed. Stay with Voice of America.
Ahead of the election in the United States, some Africa's analysts say that the new U.S. administration must pour resources, investments, and goodwill into a continent Washington often has neglected. Should this not happen, they say the U.S. could lose access to resources vital to the world's future and its own security and progress. Darren Taylor explains.
Beijing moved into Africa decades ago, investing billions of dollars in infrastructure projects and forging ties with most of the continent's top producers of minerals, metals, and rare earth elements. These materials include cobalt, copper, and lithium, which are critical to the manufacture of modern technologies, including solar panels, electric vehicles, computers, and cell phones. Many military analysts say modern defense systems also depend on the minerals, which are used in aircraft, radar systems, and guided missiles. According to the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a U.S. research institute, Chinese-owned mines, many in Africa, produce 60% of the world's rare earths. China, it says, processes almost 90% of these minerals. Adam Scher, a professor of military science at Seton Hall University in the U.S. state of New Jersey, says the United States has been unable to secure enough direct supplies of critical minerals, specifically from Africa.
Currently, there are over 31 of those critical minerals that the Department of Defense imports, over 50%, and 14 of those we have no domestic production. From a Department of Defense perspective, we're looking at the critical minerals that go into batteries, communications, radios, and satellites, semiconductors, the microchips that go into our most advanced fighter jets and our most technically capable computer systems, to include intercontinental ballistic missiles, all rely on these critical component parts. The tools that keep America safe, and the tools that our frontline troops need when they deploy around the world in the battlefield or when they deploy around the world to respond to natural disasters.
For these reasons and many more, says Scher, the next administration in Washington cannot afford to neglect forging good relations with as many mineral-rich African countries as possible. He was speaking in a recent webinar organized by Our Energy Policy, an organization focused on U.S. energy needs. Both U.S. presidential candidates, Democrat Kamala Harris and Republican Donald Trump, say their policies will focus on the prosperity of Americans. To a large degree, say many analysts, their prosperity depends on the U.S. establishing a much bigger footprint in Africa.
In order for the United States to act as the global power that we are, we have to have a reliable source of these materials, and we have to have confidence that the materials that we put in have not been tampered with, that the equipment that we use will work the way that we've designed it.
As military analysts point out, the U.S. won't have that confidence if it gets resources from China, given the animosity between the two governments. Chris Davey, director of the U.S. State Department's Office of Economic Policy, says President Joe Biden's administration developed a deep commitment to improving America's critical minerals industry.
We are several years behind in playing catch-up. The vulnerabilities exist. We understand those vulnerabilities. And really, I have to say, I've been in the State Department for over 20 years, and rarely have I seen one issue dominate as critical minerals has, which is a great sign. It shows that we're all on the same page.
Davey and many others say they hope that stays the same, no matter who's elected next to the White House. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Nearly 3.5 million voting-age adults have become U.S. citizens since the 2020 election, according to the National Partnership for New Americans. And some experts say this growing group could prove pivotal in shaping the election results. VOA's immigration reporter, Alian Barros, has more.
Silvina Gadges is a new American citizen. Her naturalization ceremony took place on the grounds of Mount Vernon, the home of the first U.S. President George Washington.
I have been living here for so many years, so why not be an American citizen? So now my status is settled.
Gadges is originally from Portugal and has been living in the United States for more than two decades. This November, she's voting for the first time.
I follow politics on radio and TV, and I follow the debates. In fact, I follow the last one on Univision. For me, it is important because I learn what they think about their ideas and what they would do.
And experts say these newly eligible voters could play a decisive role in the November presidential election, especially in key swing states. Over 600,000 naturalized citizens live in Georgia, according to the Rock the Naturalized Vote Project, close to 400,000 in Michigan, and nearly 465,000 in Arizona. Here's project co-leader Manuel Pastor at the University of Southern California.
In a state like Arizona, people who naturalized in the last about 8 to 9 years, that's considered somewhat recent naturalization, comprise about 2% of the potential electorate. In Arizona, as you will recall, in 2020, was an exceptionally close state.
Nationwide, an estimated 3.5 million voting-age adults have become citizens since the 2020 election, according to the National Partnership for New Americans. Pastor says naturalized voters tend to become more politically engaged when immigration issues dominate the discourse.
That's when the newly naturalized begin to step up and become overwhelmingly engaged because they have a bit of a personal interest in it.
Dama Bahati is originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
I arrived in the U.S. It was on September 6, 2001. I still remember the time. It was at 3 p.m. in Chicago.
He became a citizen in 2017.
When I finished my interview for citizenship, the staff at the USCIS told me, actually, now you can vote. I said, really? And I signed up right away.
Experts say naturalized citizens tend to approach their civic responsibility with great seriousness, and these new Americans could be decisive in swing states. Aline Barros, VOA News, Washington.
For some Americans living in Kenya, Key domestic and foreign policy issues matter in how they plan to vote in this year's U.S. presidential elections. VOA reporter Zainab Saeed spoke to two expatriates and has the report from the capital, Nairobi.
Brendan Seppers is an educator who has called Nairobi home for over 15 years. He is one of approximately 36,000 Americans residing in Kenya, according to a 2021 State Department report. Seppers says that foreign policy matters are just as important to him as domestic issues.
Given what one candidate has done in the past against, you know, a woman's right to choose, for instance, what she does with her body, that's something that's very important to me. LGBTQ rights is also something that's very important to me. And, you know, I think it's an interesting election because, you know, the candidate that I support, I don't 100% align on with every issue. Like, for instance, our policy towards Israel and Palestine, I wish you were better.
Seppers says although the American community in Kenya has made progress in terms of awareness on how to vote from afar and ensuring that everyone is up to speed with the election process back home, the gap between U.S. state rules and individual efforts remain a challenge.
Unless you, like, really know what the rules are for your state, it can be tricky to know, you know, even to check if you're registered to vote, to check if you've requested an absentee ballot, because those are two separate processes.
David Aronson is another American expert living in Nairobi. He says although the two countries are miles apart, American experts in Kenya are excited to participate and Kenyans are curious to learn about the democratic process of the United States.
U.S. activity can have a major, meaningful impact on countries like Kenya, and where who we elect matters a lot, even to the people of Kenya. In fact, sometimes I think, like, the rest of the world should get a separate vote on who they want to be U.S. president because it's so important to the whole world.
Seppers agrees, saying that the U.S. election has a global impact.
Policy in America impacts my life in Kenya because, you know, the U.S. has so much influence over policy in other places that it would be silly of me to act like, you know, I can just ignore the U.S. because I don't live there anymore.
Both experts believe that this year's U.S. presidential elections play a significant role in shaping international relations. Zainab Said, VOA Africa, Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. We'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. The U.S. Department of State has warned it would restrict U.S. visas for people who undermine Ghana's democracy ahead of presidential and parliamentary elections on December 7th. But allegations of voter roll irregularities have created concerns about a possible democratic backslide. The Associated Press reports that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says in a statement that the visa policy would be directed only at people who undermine democracy and not at the government or people of Ghana. The vote will be the ninth consecutive general election since the country's return to multi-party democracy in 1992. Chad's president, Mahamat Idriss Deby, has launched a security operation to track down and neutralize several hundred Boko Haram fighters who attacked and killed on Sunday more than 40 Chad government troops in the Lake Chad Basin shared by Cameroon, Nigeria, Niger, and Chad. Deby visited the area on Monday and assisted in the burial of his soldiers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Il a instauré trois jours de deuil national en la mémoire de martyrs tombés sur le champ d'honneur.
Chad State TV reports that President Mahamat Idriss Deby
has ordered that flags be flown at half-mast and that all radio and TV stations in the Central African state should play only religious music for 3 days from October 28th at midnight. Deby announced on Monday the 3 days of national mourning after visiting Gaubwa, a western village in Lake Chad on the island of Bakaram near the border with Nigeria, where Boko Haram fighters killed at least 40 Chad government troops on Sunday night, according to Chad State TV. Videos of Deby dressed in a military uniform and present at the burial of soldiers killed have been broadcast several times since Monday by local TV stations, including Chad State TV. After the burials, Deby announced the launch of Haskanite, a military operation with fresh troops deployed to Lake Chad to search out and eliminate members of the terror group hiding in the large area. Deby spoke on Chad State TV.
And thank God Allah has unique.
He says as president of Chad, he is the supreme commander of government troops and guarantor of the security and safety of civilians, and that he has ordered Chad's military to protect civilians and their property by tracking and eliminating Boko Haram terrorists who committed atrocious acts on government troops and are hiding in the vast Lake Chad. Chad officials note that Haskanite is a strong and resilient plant that grows in deserts and in the Lake Chad area. The deployed government troops are experienced and have the equipment necessary to defeat the jihadists, Deby said. Chad military officials say they estimate the number of soldiers in the jihadist attacking force was 300 and that the surprise assault came Sunday at about 10 p.m., In addition to the 40 deaths, several dozen government soldiers were injured, they said. Scores of the attackers were killed, and the fighters succeeded to escape with some dead bodies and seized weapons, according to Chad's military. Many civilians either died or were injured in the attack, Chad military says. Deby ordered that all civilians and troops receive medical care free of charge. Chad's military says the heavily armed jihadist fighters took control of the garrison before torching vehicles, motorcycles, and buildings equipped with heavy arms. The attackers disappeared in the waters of Lake Chad and surrounding villages. Saibu Issa, a conflict resolution specialist at Cameroon's University of Maroua, says it will be difficult for Chad to single-handedly fight the jihadists in Lake Chad. Issa says it is obvious that poverty and hardship push Boko Haram fighters who either surrendered or were weakened by the firepower of forces from Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, and Niger to rejoin smaller jihadist groups in Lake Chad. The United Nations says over 40,000 people have been killed and 3 million have fled their homes in Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad since 2009, when fighting between Nigerian government troops and Boko Haram militants degenerated into an armed conflict and spread to Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
On November 5th, tune in to VOA Africa for comprehensive coverage of the U.S. presidential election. Our team of reporters will be live from polling stations across the country, bringing you the latest updates and real-time results. Stay informed with VOA Africa, your trusted source for election news.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.